So in terms of lighting a candle, let's just start with, does everybody know who Jenny is? So why don't you just tell us a little bit about your ministry?
Sure.
And the Cathedral of the Beloved and what's happening there these days.
Okay. So my name is Jenny Gregg, and I'm actually an Episcopal priest. And 3 years ago, we started an outdoor worshiping service in downtown Pittsfield. It was a collaborative effort by a lot of the downtown churches, and we're worshiping on St. Joe's lawn at 2 o'clock every Sunday. And what's going on these days? Well, we are adapting. That is, I think, the name of the game a lot of times. So often people say, you're outside all the time? And I say, yes, we are. Every Sunday, whether it's raining or snowing or sleeting, we are out there. And so for the last 2 Sundays, it's been doing both of those things. raining very hard last week and snowing very hard the week before. And so we throw up a tent and we huddle under a tent and we simplify the service, but we'll sing together and we'll pray together and we'll give thanks together and we break bread together.
And have a meal. Right?
And we have a meal, yeah, absolutely. So every week there's a meal provided. If a congregation is not providing the meal, then we'll provide the meal or we'll order pizza from like Liberty or Empire or a local establishment here in town. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So in the Christian tradition, one of those things where the church has sort of lost its way, there's sort of this tradition of self-flagellation where the medieval church, they sort of take on these ascetic practices just because you're supposed to be mean to yourself.
Right.
And we're kind of trying to let that go. So I sometimes think people might think being outdoors for worship every Sunday like today
right.
is sort of self-flagellation. So why do you do this? Is it just because nobody will let you in their doors?
No, actually, that's not the case. We do it because there are a lot of people in our communities who just don't feel comfortable entering our congregations or our sanctuary spaces. They may feel comfortable coming in like downstairs as they do here to the pantry or to the meals, but to enter a sanctuary space is a totally different experience, and a lot of it is because they've been hurt by the church. Or they're not sure where they are in terms of their relationship with God. So Jesus went out all the time, right? Of course, his weather was not our weather. but he went out all the time, and he met the people where they were, and he made himself accessible. And so this is a community that is about accessibility, and it is about going to a place in the community where people can come and meet us. And we meet them right where they are every week. No pretenses. You come as you are, wherever you are, and you are welcome just as you are. And so that's what we do. And people show up. And people show up not... It used to be that people came for the food, and that used to be a huge draw. But people, I think, really now come for the community as much as anything else. And so I have people who will come and just say, hey, I was just in, walking by and I just wanted to stop in and check in and see how you were, right? And to have that personal connection, and when I ask about food, they're like, oh, I ate or whatever. It's really a secondary thought. It's about having that place to connect in. That really becomes primary.
Yeah, I really encountered that at Cathedral, because if you think about it for a moment, people who are marginalized in this society, it means many things. One, often don't have much income, but being shoved to the side basically often means nobody's really interested in your story. Even if you're going to an agency, often the agencies are underfunded. They're not treated with great respect in our society. And so they have to, see 100 people a day. I don't have, that's a nice story, but I don't have time. Let's just get you your whatever. And so where do you find people who will actually listen to the joys, the sorrows, the griefs? And I think sometimes I see people who just want to come and share their story. And Jenny is a remarkable one for listening to people's stories and honoring that so much from the heart. And she's not alone. There's a whole team of people who come to be caregivers, partly to give to others. But when you listen to somebody else's story, you hear your own story reflected back. And you remember times when each of us feels marginalized in some way. And I wish somebody would have done this. Well, maybe I can do this here. Maybe that in a way takes care of old wounds in me. And it becomes a circular kind of thing. And I see that happening at Cathedral. And there's a lot of overlap between here at South and there, which is kind of cool. So I want you to just tell us for a second about Ethan and his loss. I think he sort of embodies some of what you deal with.
Sure.
So I may get a little emotional over this because this is really close.
Oh, good.
So Ethan was one of our members. So you can't do this work without being touched by it. Ethan was a gentleman who came not every Sunday, but fairly regularly. And he struggled with alcoholism. One of the things that I so appreciated about him is his pure sense of his innocence and his embodiment of love. Ethan has taught me, and I've been spending a lot of time reflecting on this week, is I think in our middle class culture, there is this underlying expectation of ourselves that we have to have it all figured out at times for God to work through us. And that's just not true. God can do what God wants to do through us, regardless of where we find ourselves in life. And what I know about Ethan is that there was a lot of brokenness in his life. And yet, I can look at him, I can still picture his face and his smile, even when he was fully intoxicated, and know that God was working through him. And he was exuding this, not only love, but this love that he felt so deeply from this community. And so when he showed up, we know that he needed it, but he also graced us with probably more gifts than he ever realized. Just in his presence. And so I think, so one of the things that I continue to take away and one of the things that I offer to you all is that I think there are times when we think we know what giftedness looks like, but I think we really don't. And that God works in and through all circumstances.
Thank you. And part of what we do individually and as a society is we kind of create these boxes. And alcoholics, you know, go in one box. And, you know, and if they're in recovery, then they can get in the other box. But God scrambles all those things. It's not so simple. And at least most of the alcoholics who are active, I know, you do have to set limits and boundaries and you have to detach and you can't just let them run the show. And yet then there's other shining moments, like Ethan had, that were just... you remember that this is a disease, and behind the disease is a person, and that person sometimes shines through, and because of the disease and because of attitudes, they get marginalized. And so Ethan, last Sunday at the service, had a seizure, taken to the hospital, and then you found out on Monday or Tuesday that he had died. And And Jenny doesn't know, you know, what's going to happen, you know, no service for him. What's going to happen to the body? I mean, literally very marginalized. And so one of the nice connections here is if Cathedral wants to do a memorial service for Ethan, I said, I haven't talked to the diaconate, but I think they'll we can have a service here in the parlor. Because this is where we have a building that can be used for these kinds of things. And trying to hold these beloved, like the gospel says this morning, you are my beloved. That's not just Jesus, that's all of us. And it's not just the good people, it's the struggling people who know they're broken. We have some very broken people who are in high places right now who would never admit for a second that there's an inch of brokenness. And they end up breaking all kinds of things. And then you have people who know they're broken, who are in tears about their brokenness, don't know what to do. We don't know what to do with them. But just the confessing of their brokenness is in itself redemptive. They participate. And if certain other people could admit their brokenness, we might have a much better society. So Ethan, in a sense, becomes a model. Who knew? But that's where some of the tears come from. So, well, I think you did get a little glimpse of what Jenny does and who Jenny is.
So my journey this week has really made me think about how we care for people, right? And how we care for those who are marginalized. And I think it's easy to presume that there's always going to be somebody to take care of things at the end of your life, right? And what I have found this week, or at least what I was wondering for, one of the things I was reflecting on this week is like, you know, we are Cathedral of the Beloved, which means we proclaim God's belovedness, you know, to each and everybody who walks through. But this week I was really deeply reflecting on how that's just not a proclamation in life, right? It's a proclamation in death too. And so the responsibility I have as pastor of that congregation to love people into eternal rest and to give them a resting place and you know, just caring for that, those end of life issues and the body. And
Which leads to another question about this passage talks about being driven out into the wilderness. Yeah. And in a way, it feels like you've been driven out into the wilderness with this ministry. Because I was just talking to somebody who was describing, a 30-year-old Episcopal woman who's just been assigned to a very large, prosperous church somewhere. Mm-hmm. And here you are, Jenny, and you're such a gifted one. So why are you doing this rather than that?
Welcome to my tension. That's a great question. I'd be lying if I say I don't think about it on sometimes regularly, but I think, so I have always been a firm believer, really since my ordination, but I don't think I could have articulated it at the time. That the church is changing and we need different ways of being. And so one of the things I have come to appreciate about being outdoors is that there is such a draw of a diverse group of people. You know, we have people who come and volunteer regularly who are middle class. And we have people who come who are, you know, some middle class, some not middle class, some, and what I appreciate about that is the diversity. And so in our congregations, you know, it's been said, and I'm sure most of you have heard it, that our congregations, when we worship, are sometimes the most segregated times in the entire, you know, week. And I think we have to find ways of being in relationship with each other and learning to what it means to be in kinship with each other. And I think being outside, there's something about the openness that and the presence of being there that just draws a large variety of people. And for me, that's hugely important. I think the other thing for me is, and I've sought with this part of my story as well, so I was a social work major in college. So I graduated with a bachelor's in social work, and you know, and I remember taking abnormal psychology, and I TA'd the class, and then I worked in a psychiatric unit, both inpatient and outpatient. Within 2 weeks, I was like, I'm so not called to this. I was so clear. And here I am. And so, just perhaps not in such that institutional structure. So I find that curious. So that social work background for me continues to always kind of come back full circle. And so it was a huge part of my training and formation, and it's still present in my life. So, yeah. So I think that's part of my answer. I'm still sitting with it.
And from the church side, if you look at Mark's story, and Jesus, you know, is baptized in the Spirit, called the Beloved, and then you could just skip the whole temptation part, and then at the end, he, you know, goes and proclaims the kingdom of God is coming, and you could, if you leave out the temptation story with the devil and the animal, the wild animals and the angels, and this, you could sort of have Jesus be, you know, a prosperity preacher, a success, or in our modern world, you know, either, you know, a church bureaucrat or a corporate model, a mega church. You know, I mean, Jesus is obviously charismatic, gifted, talented. He could really make a go of this. He could have a church at least as big as Joel Osteen's, you know, have a great big, you know, a great big operation. He could just make a name for himself. But as soon as he's baptized, Mark tells us, immediately the Spirit kicks him into the wilderness to be tempted. And it's like, well, why would the Spirit of God want Jesus to be tempted? Because, so he does this reflection to a deeper place. So it kind of challenges this. You know, I think most of us still have in our heads that a successful church is something large, filling up the sanctuary. You know, I mean, in 1850, they built this sanctuary. They obviously had in mind it would be filled each week and people would come. And this is what you do. And you have seminary-trained ministers, and, you know, and they wear tweed jackets, and they smoke a pipe, and they pontificate, and, you know, because they know everything about God and theology, and they sit and they tell everybody the, you know, what's what. And it's kind of, you know, the corporate model, the CEO, or a church bureaucrat, denominations sometimes feel very much like that to me. And then you have this story of being kicked into the wilderness, kicked outside, booted out of the system. And then I think in the world's eye, you know, well, you don't have a building. What kind of a minister are you? You know, well, you must not be a very good one because you don't have enough people together to pay for it, you know. And it's like, or maybe the Holy Spirit is doing something different, dissolving things.
Yeah. Yes.
So one of my favorite books right now is, I'll put a plug out there for this book. It's Tattoos on the Heart by Gregory Boyle. Have you all read this book, any of you?
No.
Read it. It's so good. And it really speaks, I feel like, to the work that we're doing. And so he talks about, you know, he talks about radical kinship. And he talks about, actually, let me back up. So Gregory Boyle is a Jesuit priest. And he works in Los Angeles, and he has been involved in gang rehabilitation for the last 30 years. So was working with gangs out in LA prior to the LA riots. And so he has, Homeboy Industries is the largest gang rehabilitation center, I think, in the world, certainly within the United States. But it's based on relationship, and it's based on really seeing these gang members not as members of gangs, but as of human beings who are people and who are broken. And I feel like that is really the premise of what we function as. And so You know, so this idea of radical kinship, that you and I are no different than any two people that might show up at Cathedral this afternoon. We just have different life stories. And so it's bringing our full selves to that story. And Gregory Boyle has this, two things. He has this wonderful image that I've been thinking about. So he tells the story of the healing of the paralytic, right? And so in the healing of the paralytic, the friends bring the paralyzed man to the house, and they can't get inside. And so they climb up on the roof and they rip the roof open to bring him inside. And Gregory Boyle makes the point that we should be ripping our roofs open. And so the outsiders in that story become insiders, and the insiders become outsiders in the process of ripping that roof open. And I really, really like that image. But he talks about just the vulnerability of walking with these young men, and that not every story is a happy ending. But he talks about his own vulnerability with them as well, kind of much like I just expressed with Ethan, and just, you can't do this work and not be changed by it. And he exemplifies that in this book in such profound, deep, powerful ways. And I really think that this is where the church is being called. Outside of itself, where the insiders become outsiders and the outsiders become insiders, where we don't know all the answers, and so we have to rely on something larger and deeper, and let God do God's work in the community.
Boy, thank you, Jenny. Well, in this gospel lesson, you have this sense that Jesus is participating in something larger than himself. It's easy to think of Jesus is the Son of God. He knows all the answers. He's got it all figured out. But if you follow the story, you know, he does what he's supposed to do, go get baptized, and then the voice comes and the heavens open, and then he gets driven to the wilderness, and then the animals are there, and then the angels are there, and then he's ready to. But there's this sense of he's participating in something larger than himself, and in the process discovering things about himself, but also discovering what God is up to in the world. And I feel like Jenny's doing that, and we're working on doing that. And the word for all of that is vulnerability. You know, if you go into ministry or go into life, and, well, here's the script. I know what I'm supposed to do. I know how to do it. And here's the resources, and it's all a piece of cake. Then you got one thing. But vulnerable is, well, I'm supposed to go this direction. I have no idea how this will possibly work. How do you have a church for 3 years outside? How is this ever going to work? And then it leads to things like Ethan, which is certainly not a success story, and yet the sense of intimacy and connection and honoring this vulnerable human being's humanity in your humanity is transformative.
Right.
And so I think that, just to that point, I think it also depends on how we define success.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if we define success as being, you know, church as we've always known it, then that's one definition of success. But I think Jesus always defines success as transformation. And so in many ways, you could look at that story as it being unsuccessful. And yet on many other levels, you could look at it as being a total success story in terms of who's been transformed and by the presence of just being vulnerable.
Yeah. Like anything that rips your heart open.
Right.
Let something in that's
right.
Holy.
That's right.
Yeah. So thank you. Well, we could keep going for another half hour. Yeah. But we have this ongoing ministry together with Jenny and Cathedral of the Beloved, and I wanted you all to get an update. And also, as we begin Lent, the journey of faith. There's participating in something larger. And it's a joy to... I'm glad you have an office here, Jenny. We get to see you all the time.
Yeah.
And Noelle is here at different times, and it's just such a gift. It opens our hearts. And I'm grateful the trustees have put roofs on all our buildings so that we have good roofs, but we're being ripped, our roofs are being ripped open in other ways, and I think that's a very, very, very holy.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you so much, Jenny.
You're welcome.
On with the journey.
Thank you.